Welcome to Stay Lifted, Sis. For those that don't know me, I am Devin J. Hall, the Loudmouth Brown Girl. I have been the Loudmouth Brown Girl for the last 5 years, but I've been training for this my entire life. I'm an author, a podcaster, a writer, blogger, and content creator. And today, my guest is my friend and colleague, Egberto Willis. Before we get started, we would like to do our acknowledgement and moment of silence. We respectfully acknowledge that I am blessed by the land upon which we gather, live, and connect. It is the traditional and unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Kwinana, the Katsi, the Semiahmoo, and the Tsawwassen First Nations. We are nothing if we are not aware of that which came before. This show has a content warning for sex, childhood memories, cannabis use, politics, and open swearing. Hey, Berto, welcome. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, it's like Berto, but you know what? People say it in a lot of different ways. I accept whatever you call me. I've been called worse.
I'm one of those people that like I'm kind of black because I'm mixed. So like I just assume that I can say everything in all the
And guess what? You
languages.
can. You can.
It's not true. There's a specific way. All right. So today is a very special day because it's October 6, 2022. And I have laughed this morning. I have cried. I woke up and I was like, nothing great is going to happen. Today is going to be awful. It's going to be shit. And then President Biden was like, yo, Devin, hold my beer. And came out and said he was going to free thousands of prisoners, thousands of them, who were in jail for cannabis possession. And the reason that today is so important, first of all, because that is fucking huge. But secondly, because you're here and it is literally your job to discuss politics as a black man in America. And you're special to me because you're a member of Writers and Editors of Color. You're the host and founder of Politics Done Right. And you have talked to everybody that like is anybody. Like you interviewed AOC. Before I did our interview, I was like, oh, this isn't going to be a big deal. And then I go on to see who you are, as I would for any interview that I was doing. And I see a picture of you with AOC. And I started to cry. I was like, I can't do this. This guy's interviewed AOC. Tell us about who you are and what you do. Let's start with that.
Well, I am just Egberto Willis. I'm just a guy who wanted to make a difference. I am originally from Central America, Panama. I came to the United States to go to school. I've always been a loudmouth activist. So even when I was in college at the university, at Blinn College first, a little tiny college in Brenham, Texas, to moving on to University of Texas at Austin, I was always into politics. So I'm an engineer by training, so I went there for engineering, but I was always doing the things like trying to get university to divest its money from South Africa with the South African Liberation Action Committee, or I was in the Central American Association, trying to get us to be more to get together and make the changes that in policy towards these different countries. After that, I kind of went on a hiatus as I worked for corporate America as an engineer and as I formed my own software business. I couldn't quite be a loudmouth, so I used to blog for a long time under a pseudonym. After doing the bit for a pseudonym and my daughter, when my daughter left this very conservative town to go to college, it was like, Viva la vida loca. It was like the freedom. I could actually be who I really was. So at that point, I decided to just make my politics not only the politics that my friends knew about, but the politics I needed to go out there in 20. In 2010, after Obama was attempting to get healthcare passed, I was going through utter hell with the tea, watching the Tea Party and what they were doing, watching how they were talking about healthcare. So I got so mad, I wrote my first book, As I See It, Class. Can I show it? As I See It, As I See It, Class Warfare, The Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom. I wrote that book because I was very, very upset that nobody understood how our economic system ran. And even the people voting against, not the people voting against, but the people who were against the healthcare system, they just didn't get it. They just didn't understand how the economic system worked. Following that, I came out and I wrote another book. It's Worth It, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relative, Friends, and Neighbors, because I understood that it's not good enough to know something, but you have to be able to talk to others that don't think like you or may not even like you. You have to get them to like you to actually be able to talk to them. And
And
the
that's the part. That's the part that I think matters the most about you, is you don't just, when we get into these WEOC conversations on spaces, I get so angry because I'm like, we know what the problems are. We get it. Racism, hunger, classism, sexism, people not understanding economy being taught in Texas one way and then being taught in California some in a completely different way. Because the economics in California versus what's in Texas are different. So you're learning different things about how different economies work, but not how to make them come together, right? And so my biggest grievance has always been, what the fuck do we do?
Right.
I know what the problems are. What do we do? And you are very much, this is what we do. We write books, we start podcasts, we take what we know, we educate others.
I agree so wholeheartedly, Devin, because I mean, and that's why I read your stuff and liked you, because again, you're not just articulating problems. You're saying that these are the things that we have to do, right? We have to be in the game with what you write. I mean, you are heavy. You come up,
I do.
but what I'm saying is you make people think. And we need people coming. You know, when they found the cure, not the cure to AIDS, but that when they were able to control AIDS, it wasn't that they were able to kill AIDS. Is that they kept AIDS so confused by coming from all different directions. I come to people as I'm always trying to make, not, I don't hold back, but I always try to see through the eyes of others. And the way I see you write, you are in your face. And I think that we need both sides. You know, people need to have a place to land. I like them to meet you and then come and land with me. What I mean
Yeah.
is that you make them aware that there's a problem. They don't know what the hell to do. And then they come to somebody who can actually say, well, you know what? Look, what Devon said is absolutely correct. But how can we actually build that bridge? And in fact, on my book, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Neighbors, that is the logo on the book, a bridge, you know? So not all of us want to, care to, or will do that. Those of us who can, I think, should. Those of us who don't want to, shouldn't. But, you know, it's open for everybody to do their thing. The most important thing, in my opinion, is I respect what you do. I respect the way you do it. And
Well,
I
I respect the way that you do it because there's a lot of things that, like, I thought I understood American politics. I thought I understood the racism in America. I thought I knew what was going on because I had a very Canadian education. And Canada is very much like, this is what America is doing and America is bad and blah, 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 blah. And we're like, we are galvanized in Canada to believe that we are the good country and that everybody in the world loves us because we are the nice people. And then you grow up and you're like, wait a minute, that ain't true. That my whole childhood was a complete lie. And so then there's somebody like you to land with that's like, yes, it was. But here we go. We have these people in policy who are willing to do the work. We just have to be there to support them. And that's what I think you do, is that you make it easy to understand what the solutions to the problems that I acknowledge are.
yeah, I don't want to get presumptuous and like I know the solution. I like to look at it as I want to be a part of the solution. In other words,
Yeah.
believe it or not, like I tell people a lot of times, I am a sponge. Like when I read your work or I read the work of other folks at Woke or I you know, for me it's always like a sponge and using that and modifying the way I do things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because that is how you make changes. I can't hope to influence you if you don't believe I respect you. If you believe I will always be antagonistic to you, you have no reason to want to hear me. If you know that I not just say I respect you, but if I genuinely look at
Yeah.
you as a human being and say, look, damn it, I disagree with you. I don't like what you're saying or whatever, but I see your humanity. And I understand. I mean, it is like how I deal with, you know, when we talk about the white people issue, et cetera, right? Are most white people racist? The actual answer is yes. Is it their fault? In my opinion, and again, my opinion, the answer is no. A lot of times,
I'm going to tell you something that's going to surprise you. I agree with you. And I'll tell you why. Because we, you and me specifically, and people like us, whether we're black, full black, or mixed race black, any amount of color in our skin, are conditioned to believe that we are in danger because of the color of our skin. White people are conditioned to believe that we are dangerous because of the color of our skin. This is a generational curse.
Right.
And it's only when we come together, like Kanye West wore a white shirt, a White Lives Shirt Matter or White Lives Matter shirt. I want to punch the kid in the head, not because he wore the shirt, because the shirt is not wrong. White lives do matter.
Yes.
But it is not an appropriate response to Black Lives Matter.
Right. Right. And the thing about it is, you know, and let me tell you, I from the beginning of that, because I am very, I know, what's her name, Patrice Collars, right?
Yeah.
I went to a Netroots and met Netroots, where I do radio every year for the last 12, 15 years. And I met Patrice Collars there. And I looked at Patrice when they created that. I think it was in Arizona that we discussed it. And then I interviewed her on my show. And I said, why did you select Black Lives Matter? Why didn't you say Black Lives Matter too?
Yeah.
And she said, who had been talking about it? You know, a lot of sloganeering is to get the attention.
Yeah.
And that by saying Black Lives Matter, it white people hearing that, it jars them. But when you say Black Lives Matter too, they say, oh, we know. Right.
That and part. That's I got the, called. Did you see that on Twitter? I got called a Nazi the other day.
No, I didn't see that one.
This white guy, a white person, was calling me a Nazi, and I was like, dude, I'm not even going to argue with you. Like, I refuse to argue with you, because if you don't know what words mean, I'm not communicating with you.
Right.
Right. And then I posted the dictionary term, like the dictionary image of what it says a Nazi is. So he comes back and he gives me the same dictionary definition and says, see, you're a Nazi. And I was like, I'm done. I'm done. Hands up. I'm out. Like, I'm washing my hands of this conversation, because I am not going to argue with somebody who is using the definition and deliberately twisting my words.
Exactly.
Right. And that's where, when Black Lives Matter came out, I was so colonized in my own brain. I was like, yo, wait, what? No, White Lives Matter. White Lives Matter. And it took me a minute to be like, oh, this is why Black Lives Matter. Because in Canada, we were not hearing about what was happening in America.
Right.
We only heard about Rodney King by accident.
Right.
It wasn't like it was an accident. It was like a, oh, by the way, this happened.
It's systemic in the United States. It is systemic.
Yeah. And I think that Canada really perpetuates the system. I think that Canada takes America's lead and goes, okay, well, American white people don't want to talk about this, so Canadian white people aren't going to want to talk about this. And the problem with that is we are not having the same problem in Canada.
Right. But
trucker lives matter.
Right, 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 right. It is a shame. But, you know, the good thing about it is I have a mixed audience, both from an ideological standpoint and ideologically, racially, ethnically. I have a very, very balanced group. Most of my audience is white because, again, like I said, it's ideologically balanced and it is racially balanced. And it looks just like America. If I look at all of my people, it looks just like my show looks just like America. And the good thing about it is, in looking like America, we get to have some endearing conversations in our chats, et cetera, which is what we should want, you know?
I think so. And I the thing that I love about your show is that the audience can participate.
Yes.
I don't necessarily like all the things that they say.
Right.
All of the time. But I like that they can participate, because it gives one of the things that I love about your show is, first of all, you're not a political pundit. Like, no. You're not, I think you've been on CNN, but like, You're not one direction or the other direction. It's what is the best for my community is where I feel like your voice really comes from. And then the second thing I like about your show is that because you're a community-based voice, the audience being able to participate and being from around the world, it gives your show a more well-rounded vision, I think, for what the future could be.
I tried my best, and let me tell you better, right? I think one of the biggest things on my show is I have no fear in being wrong. I have no fear in you calling me out. In fact, I don't even have you fear any fear in you slandering me. People have called up and called me the N-word so often, and I have responded like, "Did you have a bad day?" and that sort of thing. And it is funny because I've had people then write me long letters of apology and saying they're a changed person. I mean, because you didn't give them the reaction or the explosion or whatever that they have. Because I've always thought that words are just that, words, right? And if I allow your slander to have an effect on me, I've given you power over me.
I think it's more than that. I think that when we look at these documentaries, where like Kamau Bell, who is
Yeah, I
If
love
before I die, I need to be interviewed by that man. I need to sit down with him and have him pick my brain because I think he has a way of pulling things out of people
Yes.
in a psychological way as he's interviewing them, and that makes them think,
Yes.
right? And he has sat down with white supremacists who have said, you know what? I've had a second thought. We've seen the documentaries of people who were white supremacists their whole lives. And then they got married, and then they had kids, and they switched their mindset because a black man sat down with them and said, "Let's have a conversation." And that conditioning that we were talking about earlier gets broken up by the, "Wait a minute, this is what I was told, but this is what I've seen."
Right.
And you give people the opportunity to see and to hear you live on the air. Which is like that's being vulnerable as a black man
Yes.
in America.
Yeah, and like I said, and I think that the most important part about that, in my humble opinion, is that I honestly don't have any fear in being if some in being called out or having to. I mean, there are a couple of times when somebody have corrected me that I go on to the show either immediately if it's there or the next day, and I make sure first to salute the person who have corrected me, and to if an apology is needed, there's an apology there, and if there and also a correction to make sure that it goes up. I've even gone as far as editing the podcasts. If it's a bad one, if it's one that I think has repercussions. I don't remember, there was one of them that I think I gave a wrong stat that changed the what I was saying, and I really didn't want that into the ethos. So I went into the MP3, I went into the MP4, and all of that, cut it out, and just to make sure that I didn't have, bad information out there.
I really appreciate that. I don't edit my podcasts. And
Right.
it's not because I get them perfect the first time around. It's because these conversations are supposed to be about keeping people lifted and happy in times
Yes.
when like shit is miserable, man. Like this year kicked my ass. Stay Lifted Sis was going to be like my premier podcast. It was going to be perfect. It was going to be pristine. It was going to be my thing. And everybody was going to love it and listen to it. And I was going to be famous because of it. And that didn't happen because mental health just bit my butt this year and I didn't get as far as I wanted to. But I don't edit them because I want people to see like my guests are not perfect people.
Right.
They're weird, they fart, they burp, they make mistakes, they trip, they walk on water sometimes when they don't clean up after themselves. Like it's normal to just be normal. And these conversations are supposed to be between friends. And one of the things that I love about you is you support everybody.
Yes.
Like if there's a viewpoint that you don't even necessarily agree with, you still put it out there and say, "Hey, what do you think about this?"
I think that's important, Devon. I honestly think it's important because I see, I have the whole structure that I was reared in, right? And you were reared differently. You are a I don't know if you, what you call yourself. If you call yourself black, mixed, what do you call yourself? Everybody.
I go with mixed black, whatever fits my needs,
Oh.
which pisses people off because they're like, well, are you mixed or are you Creole or are you black? And I'm like, I'm all three.
Yeah,
I'm also
well,
white. So,
right.
like, does it bother you?
No, it doesn't at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the only reason I do that again is from another person. I learned like you let them identify themselves, and then you work with that. And that's why I said let me ask first, right? But the thing about it is you have your own experience in Canada. You know, we have images of Canada of all the nice people, and even the Canadians that I know here in my town, they're so sweet. And I don't know how much of that is just the facade that Canada forces on you, but it
It's a
is
lot.
right.
We are not that nice.
Okay.
Come here, come here. We'll take you drinking. We'll show you how not nice we are.
Okay, good. I'm gonna take you up on that. Which you're not in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, I am.
You
Yeah.
are in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I Vancouver is probably the cleanest city I have ever seen.
Really?
I don't know if it's still that way or not, but I came here
No.
about 2 decades ago. And Vancouver, you could eat off of the streets, and then right at the bay, all those beautiful buildings. I'm like, wow.
The only thing we still have are the buildings. We have the buildings, but we also have, I was down there the other day, actually. It was my first time in Vancouver since before the pandemic. My very last trip to Vancouver was like, I think 2 months before the pandemic hit in the January of last year or the year before. And I remember sitting down at my computer and I'm like, okay, this year, we're going to do all these things. I have my list. My goals are set. Put on CNN and Joe Biden goes, so we're in the middle of a pandemic. And I went,
Oops.
let me just rip all that up. I'm not making any money for the next 2 years because I know this. Like I knew, right? So I went to Vancouver last this week and it was a shithole.
Really?
It's terrible. There's a tent city everywhere. It smells like urine. It's just
What?
disgusting. One of my friends who lives in the downtown east side, in a building that is managed by somebody I know, was telling me that in every single tent in the downtown east side, there is a gun or a weapon of some kind that can cause harm. I said to her, where are the dispensaries? She said, why bother? Go buy from a tent. I said, are you kidding me? Like, I wouldn't, like, in a million years, I would never buy cannabis off the street the way that I would have at 15.
Right.
Like, there's just no way. It's not safe. It's not clean. It's, I now, with what I know about cannabis now, I would never buy cannabis off the street in Vancouver because it's so dangerous. Yeah, it's completely different. It's
Oh,
we have
that, wow,
random
that.
attacks of violence, random attacks against Asian people, random attacks against people of color, against women. It's a completely different
So
animal.
that's Trumpism that went across the border, eh?
Well, it's funny because right after Trump won the election, Vancouver went out of their way to get his name off the Trump building in Vancouver. So he's been scrubbed from Vancouver, but yeah, a lot of that racism, that white stuff, it's here.
Wow, it's amazing. But
It's here.
the one place I remember going to out there in Vancouver also was this place called Grouse Mountain, where you took that little
Still there, yeah, the
trolley up.
gondola, yeah.
Yeah, because the gondola line, it was very cold up there. I remember
Yeah.
in the middle of the summer, it was freezing up there.
Oh, I love it up there. It's beautiful. It's
Yes.
absolutely beautiful. It's one of my favorite places in the world. The one thing that bothers me about Grouse Mountain is all the people. Like, Grouse Mountain is the place where you want to go and you want to sit and you just
Meditate.
want to be with God,
Yes.
you know? And there's just people everywhere. So it's very loud.
Now, ironically, again, that is how much things have changed. Because when I went to Grouse Mountain, there are two parts. There's a landing where you have the dam, where you have it
Yeah.
pull back the lake, and then you go further up. And we didn't have a lot of people, and that was like in July or something like that. And it
Yeah,
was
at the
cold.
very, 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 very top, you won't find a lot of people. And that's because we grew up with Crabs Mountain, so like we've already been there. The top is for the tourists.
Okay,
We
well,
go to the lodge and we like eat soup and we hang out in the lodge and take the tour and do all the touristy stuff. And the people who are like, we want to go visit Vancouver to go to Grouse Mountain, they're all hikers. They're all sick. They're all like psychotic, weird people that like exercise.
I just loved it though. I remember going up there and I'm from Panama. Come on, we don't have ice on the ground. And I saw the ice. I saw snow in the middle of the summer on the top of Grouse Mountain.
Yeah.
This
Where else did you go when you came to Canada?
that's the only place I've been in Canada. I want to also
Okay.
go to Toronto because I heard the food is the best in Toronto. So
Toronto has the better food. I
yeah.
will say this because it's so diverse. Vancouver, Calgary has the best Indian food, but there's so many Jamaican people in Toronto that I suspect that they have the better Jamaican food.
Yes, the jerk chicken and the jerk pork. Yeah, I can't wait.
Oh, jerk chicken is, oh yeah. Okay. Now, if we're talking jerk chicken, that is like that's downtown Vancouver. There's a restaurant. I will find it. I will DM it to you. It's so good. I'm not going to announce it because I don't want everybody to go there. They're already successful enough. They don't need your business. Leave them alone. They're for the us locals that have nowhere to go. But oh my God, is it good? It's really good food. What when you when you're off the show, when you're done, right?
Yes.
And you've signed off today for the day. What's the first thing that you do to decompress?
That is one of my failures. As soon as I'm done with my show, I go on to processing the videos, getting it in podcast form, etc. And after that, it's right back into getting some research done for the next day.
See, and this is the thing that people don't understand, because they're like, if you're a content creator, you got to take a break, and you got to like, but if you take a break, then it doesn't get done.
So I need to learn some better coping skills, and I'm still open to suggestions on that.
I
But
have a book for you.
okay, you just did you write it?
I did.
Okay, well, you said I'll buy it. Is it on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. It's called Fun Un Uncomfortable Two Eyes. Fundamental Foundations for Mental Health Content Creators. But it's good for all content creators, because if
Well,
you're
you know, you need
creating
to send me the
content,
link so I can go buy your book.
yeah, it's all about how to like get to know yourself, how to interview yourself, how to like get comfortable talking in front of the camera, which you already know all this stuff because
No,
you've been
but
doing it.
I don't ever say that. I never say that, young lady. I always there's always something that you can read that you can pick up from somebody else that
I think you'd like it. I think you'd like it. I
Good. Well,
really
then
do.
I send me that link and I'll be sure to go ahead and get it.
So I have some other questions for you, but I want to
Yes,
ask
ma'am.
this one. Cannabis in America. What do you think the effect is going to be with all of these people now being pardoned? Will they have like my first question is a lot of the people being pardoned are people that have been arrested for federal crimes of possession, right, on the federal level, which means that on the state and on the city level, they're not being pardoned for
They're
those
still in jail
crimes.
and locked up.
So I have a few questions. One is, does this mean that they will ever be able to vote? And two is, what does this mean in terms of their incarceration if they're federally incarcerated, but they're incarcerated as well for crimes that are based on the city and the state level?
They're two separate governmental systems altogether.
Okay.
All Biden can do is to protect them from the federal government. If they also have outstanding state crimes, it's whatever that state has. Whether they can vote or not, some states allow you to vote after you've completed your sentence and you've paid whatever fines. In the case of Florida is sort of the people overwhelmingly voted for Florida that as soon as somebody's released from jail, that they should have the ability to vote, but the Republicans didn't allow it. They threw in that you have to pay all your bills before you can actually vote. So, I mean, it's on a state by state basis, whether, and I don't recall, we are 50 states, not what, nine provinces in Canada, I believe. We are 50 states. And Everybody have their own policies now. Marijuana has always been, or drugs and every kind of conviction has always been used to put people of color away because, again, given that they vote a certain way, that's a guaranteed way to ensure that votes in particular areas, especially in states like Mississippi and Alabama, that have a huge population, 33% in Mississippi, that are black. By putting a whole lot of those people away, guess what? You can actually continue to, to win elections, which is what they do.
Here's the thing, though, because Black people are very, very loyal voters.
Yes.
So let's go back generations, okay?
Yes.
The Republicans take one look at slavery and go, huh, if we release the slaves, we have more people to vote for us. So
Yes.
they release the slaves. Skip forward 100 million gazillion generations, and the Republicans are doing the exact opposite of how they started and formed their party to begin with.
Right.
So my question is, Black people, loyal voters, you think a Republican would be smart and go, but hey, if we back Biden up on this, then we will have access to some of those voters too, because some of those Black people are going to go, but wait a minute, the Republicans actually helped make this happen. So my question is, why are the Republicans being stupid?
They don't yet have the transition. We have to remember when did Black people stop voting Republican and started voting Democratic? After we had the Voting Rights Act and the not only the Voting Rights Act but the Civil Rights Act. Okay, what happened then is that we got the Civil Rights Act from a large plurality of Republicans that helped pass that. Southern Democrats had wanted nothing to do with civil rights. Nothing. In fact, they became what was then known as the Dixiecrats. And the Dixiecrats are now leaders with or were then became leaders in the Republican Party. So we had a switcheroo here. We had a lot of them former Southern Democrats who became the stars of the Republican Party. And that's why the Republican Party now will have a hard time making that switch because it became the part a party populated by a large percentage of racists. Now, the racists in those parties don't want black people, but the leaders of the party don't care. They just want to win. How do you make that transition between racist and admitting a whole bunch of black people? It's not going to happen. So their only alternative is what they're doing right now, and that is to create a system where we're no longer they like to say we're not a democracy, we're a republic, which I kind of wonder why a representative democracy isn't a republic, but it is. What they're trying to do now is rig a system in which we can have minority rule. They started with the Supreme Court. We're now the Supreme Court has a super majority of conservatives that don't have the right to be there. And then I don't know, in America we have this stuff called gerrymandering, which can calculate, which can throw all the black people and people of color into one district.
Yeah, the way your districts are made up,
Right.
ours are kind of similar. Like, I don't vote for the prime minister or who I want to be prime minister. I vote for
Right.
their party, right?
Right.
So I vote on a municipal level. So I vote, and we have a neighborhood MLA. Well, however many votes he gets, it like elevates. So like, if he gets voted in our district, then the guy above him gets voted in, and if he
Right.
gets, and so on and so forth, right? So it's either way, no matter how you shift it, it's fucking stupid. It's the stupidest way in America and in Canada, I think, of organizing votes. Every vote should count for one
Right.
vote, period.
I agree. In fact, I think national offices should be elected by popular vote. We don't get that. We have something called an electoral college. And the electoral college does not always mimic does not always mimic the popular vote, and that's why we got Trump and Bush number two. They were all voted in with their.
I can't. The words electoral college trigger me
Yes.
like in like violent ways. Like, as a Canadian who fought against Donald Trump so hard, who used every second of my platform to inform your voters, this is what you're getting into. This is what we're hearing in Canada. this, you need to know this information before you go and vote. As somebody who spent years fighting for democracy in America as a member of Anonymous, to watch Donald Trump take that fucking podium. As a Canadian, I cannot express how it feels.
I
I could
got
not
you.
imagine how Americans felt.
Exactly.
Like, I can't fathom the words that an American would use on election night, the night that Donald Trump wins presidency the first time. And then
Yeah.
to find out the motherfucker is going to run a second time
Well, we'll
while
see.
being charged with federal crimes of treason.
Yes. Yes. It is shameful. It is shameful, but that is where we live. That is what we're living through right now. That's what we're living through.
It's so funny because you think of Cuba, you think of Puerto Rico, you think of Iran, you think of all of these places around the world where Americans have for generations interfered and interrupted in free elections for the same reasons, for racism, for religion, for ethnic cleansing, to stop and prevent all of these horrible things from
Yes.
happening. America has stepped in and said, yo, let's like dial it back, let's be diplomatic. And yet in America, at the seams, everything is coming apart from what we're seeing on the outside. What does it feel like for you, as an American who's trying to do politics in a way that's different from the way that like CNN or The View or MSNBC is doing it? You're the first person in America doing politics with a global audience.
Yes.
A global audience has access to you. So that pressure must be kind of heavy.
I mean, the way I look at it is, I think first of all, I'm blessed I'm blessed for that, right? If you have people looking at you from all over, you have to feel blessed. I mean, I have people from Barcelona that was into the chat today, you know. I mean, it is great. But what I think keeps me grounded in the job itself is knowing that I never quit. In other words, knowing that it doesn't matter what the results of the next election is going to be, that's going to have no impact in me trying to do what many of us as progressives think, most people say that they want. And as such, just kind of deconstructing the lies, deconstructing the misinformation, deconstructing all of that in such a manner that people can say, all right, I get it. I get it. And the thing about it is, the people that will confuse you, they are betting that you are going to be so overwhelmed by the amount of cash they have to misinform, that you're just going to throw your hands up in the air and quit. But like I said, I know math, and there's something called geometric progression. If I can speak to 5 or 10 or 50 people, and those 50 people can speak to 10 or 15 or 50, reaching the population of your country doesn't take many levels, right? If you do the math, you see why geometric progression is powerful. And the difference between your geometric progression and being top down, meaning having the money to advertise on the top, is that people develop relationships. And while relationships take a long time to develop, they're longer lasting, right? So I look at my job as a 25-year endeavor, right? That I'm not looking for
I was
results.
thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about, because I'm struggling sometimes. I struggle, right? With like, okay, I gave up really a job that I loved because I didn't like the organization and what they were doing anymore. I went and I did something that I was fascinated by and I had a really bad experience and, got arrested, had a panic attack, whatever. Started this and like, there's a lot of days where I'm like, what is it for? And then even today I'm laying here and I'm like, I got nothing. Like I have nothing left. I'm done. I'm so tired. I'm so exhausted. It's not that I have nothing to live for. It's that what's the mission? Like, what is the purpose of what we're doing here? And it's education, informing, and giving people a space to speak.
Right. And that is more important than anything else, especially in these times. You know what? I have some people, even at KPFT, the radio station that I do my stuff at. I remember a person saying, just the ability to let others hear me. You know, that's what the guy said. It was like, he feels empowered. I learned not to say I am trying to empower people. I don't have the ability, the right, or whatever to empower anybody. People are already empowered. What we do is we remind them that the power lies within them. I learned that at a conference in New York 2 months ago, because all over a lot of stuff I've written, I would say, politics done right, we empower folks to do. Who the hell are you to empower anybody? It is about reminding folks that they are already empowered to do what needs to get done and reminding them.
And that's the premise of the second book that I wrote, The Uncomfortable Two, was that like you already know all this stuff. You know all this stuff. It's not about whether or not you know yourself. It's do you know how to pull that out so you can show other people? Right? Well, here are some skills that you can do wrapped up in a journal that you can write about. You can create like a portfolio for yourself. You can pull in. There's an exercise in there that's like create your corner. I love because you're always changing your background, but like it's a suggestion on creating a corner and using fabric samples. Well, put some fabric samples in the journal to remind you of the fact that like you know what you want, you just have to find it, right? And that's again another thing that I love about your show. But we're running out of time, and I have to ask because I'm dying to know because I'm of two minds. I love her. I hate her. I love to hate her. So I'm of three minds. What is AOC like in real life?
I actually love AOC, and I think sometimes AOC gets a bad rap because she's such a good politician. I met AOC at a Netroots convention, and AOC was green behind the ear, and she was running against the guy that should have been the next speaker of the next speaker of the House. And she came to me and she started talking, and she said, I interviewed her, and after I interviewed her, I shook her hand and I said, you will be the next you will be the next congressperson from your district. And she looked at me and she kind of smirked and smiled and said, oh, thank you. I have the video version. Oh, thank you, thank you. And then I said, oh, no doubt. And I knew the person she was running against, right? But you know, you can look at somebody and see that person has
Obama,
it.
AOC. They
Exactly.
just, I saw Obama sit down. I saw him sit down on The View and I went,
Yes.
he gonna be president. And
Yes.
everybody went, no. And I went, he gonna be president. Look at
Yeah.
that man. Like, you just know.
Oh, yeah.
And AOC had the same thing. She held up those shoes and I went, Now,
Yeah.
I will digress. I don't necessarily agree with all her politics or her policies or the way she handles things. But I like her.
Right. And the thing about it is, what I like about her also, she's willing to make mistakes. She's willing to come back and say, ah, okay, I guess so. You know, but more importantly, I don't look. Why you see me constantly still write about her, follow her, etc., is because I think our future lies in free thinkers, people that are willing to, you know, I mean, I don't want her agreeing with me all of the time if she doesn't, right? But I know there's one thing that I know, she's a progressive. You know, she made some comments the other day that really riled up folk when she, I think it had to do with race or something like that. And she made another comment where, I mean, she's Puerto Rican, so you know, there's some black in the woman, you know. It's hard for there not to be. And she came back right away and said something to the effect, but I'm not trying to say that I'm, you know, and I'm like, I don't even know why you had to bring
The
that.
thing that I like about her is she comes from working class.
Yes.
And you got that when she was running the first time.
Yes.
Because you do not wear the same pair of shoes every day, all day, for 12 to 15 hours a day, walking from one house to the other,
Yes.
unless A, you can't afford a second pair of shoes,
Right.
but B, unless you come from that working class. And
Right.
my mom was working class. And
Right.
so She was working two and three jobs sometimes and still not being able to
But
put
you know
food
what
on
else
the table.
too, Devon? She, in as much as like, she probably made quite with the donations that she get and all of that, she probably has a lot of money. She could have made a ton more. It seems like she refused to be a capitalist, okay? Because there's so much to her brand that she could clean up like others who claim to be progressive have done. She hasn't yet, that I've seen.
And I think that we one of the things that bothers me about politics is I think that politicians stick around too long. I would like to see her leave. I would like to see her leave, become an actress, a teacher, a doctor, a nurse. I would like to see have ha I would like to see her have a second career as something else. And I'll tell you why. It's because, first of all, we put so much pressure on our politicians to be like celebrities. We want them to be like celebrities because we want as much access to them as possible. And then they become celebrities, and then we do nothing but criticize them.
Right. Now,
Right?
let me put a caveat in there. I watch her and the way she handles herself in with corporations when she's interviewing them, right? And I want when she's going to leave, I want her to either be grooming others or others groomed, ready
Yeah,
to take
something.
on that mantra because having her in there and she's a very when I told you one of the things that I got from her in the direct face-to-face interview is how intelligent the little I mean she's young, how intelligent she was beyond her years, right? And when you say about somebody who has worked, you know, I would give her that being a bartender and having to live some of the ways, you know, she knows what working, I mean, she's not talking working class only.
No.
She's lived working class, right? Now, I'm with you where, you know, if she has gone beyond her usefulness, which many of these politicians have, I think she should leave. And you kind of have a feeling when you're no longer relevant, you know? Like Nancy Pelosi, a lot of people wanted her gone, but I thought that Nancy Pelosi's biggest problem was she has not replicated somebody who has command of the House. Like she has. I think one of the worst things somebody can do is if they're in a position that needs to be transitioned to not have created the person that's going to, or the person or persons prepare others to transition you out of that place.
Yeah, I'd like to see her do something, whether it's teaching or in the celebrity world or not in the celebrity world, I don't care. I would like to see her do something else at some point. Not today, not tomorrow, not
Right,
for
I
years.
got you.
AOC, do not quit. We still need you in office.
I
You're
got
not done
you.
yet. Don't even think about it. But I say this because I think that she has the potential to teach others how it's done. You go in, you do the work, and then you move on to something else.
Exactly. You know, I'm 100% there with you. You have to be able to replicate that which worked perfectly. I agree with you right there, Devon.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, my friend, my love, I love talking to you because you're one of the few people I actually get to talk politics with. Everybody else is just like, she doesn't know what she's talking about because she's just, crazy. That's probably sometimes true. Where can people find you on social media?
Okay, there are two places you can go to politicsdoneright.com. That is where everything about my program is found. And can I tell folks where they can subscribe to my podcast? You can subscribe to my podcast at anchor.fm/EgbertoWillis/subscribe.
And
And
I'll make sure that that's in the show notes as well for everybody.
exact great. I'll send you all the links that would be nice if you are able to put in there or
Absolutely.
not.
Absolutely. And I'm Devin J. Hall from loudmouthbrowngirl.com. You can find me at loudmouthbrowngirl.com. My new book, Uncomfortable to Fundamental Foundations for Mental Health Content Creators, is out now. So please go buy it because I would like to eat meat at some point this week. Thank you for listening. Alberto, thank you so much for being on the show. I love you. I think you are so smart and so brilliant and just so generous and kind with your time to your community and to all of your listeners. And I love you.
I love you too, young lady. Thank you so kindly for having me. It is my honor to have appeared on your show. Thank you.